Murphy matched my smile. One more short joke and I'm taking a kneecap. Murphy, I chided, petty violence is beneath you, which is saying something. Keep it up, wise guy. I'm always going to be taller than you once you're lying unconscious on the ground. You're right, that was a low blow. I'll try to rise above it. She showed me a clenched fist. Pow, Dresden, right to the moon. We reached Murphy's car. Rollins was in the passenger seat pretending to snore. He wasn't the sort to just fall asleep. So, Summer made a run at you, Murphy said. You think the attack on Marcone's building is connected with that? I lost my faith in coincidence, I said. Get in, she said. I'll give you a ride home. I shook my head. There might be something I can do here, but I need to be alone, and I need a donut. Murphy arched a delicate dark gold eyebrow. Okay. Get your mind out of the gutter and give me the damn donut. Murphy shook her head and got in her car. She tossed me a sack from Dunkin' Donuts that was sitting on Rollins's side of the dashboard. Hey, Rollins protested without opening his eyes. For a good cause, I told him, nodding my thanks to Murphy. Call you when I know something. She frowned at my nose. You sure you want to be alone? I winked one of my blackened eyes at her. Some things a wizard has to do for himself, I said. Rollins swallowed a titter. I get no respect. They drove off and left me in the silently falling snow in the still hours before dawn. There were still a couple of fire crews and uniformed cops there, the latter blocking off the street, though the former weren't actively firefighting. The building was out and coated in a layer of ice, but I guess there always could have been something hidden in the walls and ready to pop out again. I overheard one of them telling another that the road crew that was supposed to clean the rubble out of the street was helping a city plow truck stuck in the snow and would be there when they could. I trudged to about a block away, found an alley not choked, and went in with my donut. I debated for a moment what approach I should take. My relationship with this particular source had changed over the years, after all. Reason indicated that sticking with long-standing procedure was my best bet. Instinct told me that reason had disappointed me more than once and that it wasn't thinking in the long term anyway. Over the years, my instincts and I have gotten cozy. So, instead of bothering with a simple bait and snare, I braced my feet, held out my right hand, palm up, placed the donut upon it like an offering, and murmured a name. Names, capital N, have power. If you know something's name, you automatically have a conduit with which you can reach out and touch it, a way to home in on it with magic. Sometimes that can be a really bad idea. Speak the name of a big bad spiritual entity, and you might be able to touch it, sure, but it can touch you right back. And the big boys tend to do it a lot harder than any mortal. It's worth as much as your soul to speak the name of beings like that. But the Never Never is a big place, and not to mix metaphors, but there are plenty of fish in that sea. There are literally countless beings of far less metaphysical significance, and it really isn't terribly difficult to get one of them to do your bidding by invoking its name. People have names, too, sort of. Mortals have this nasty habit of constantly reassessing their personal identity, their values, their beliefs, and it makes it a far more slippery business to use a mortal's name against them. I know a few names. I invoked this one as lightly and gently as I could in an effort to be polite. It didn't take me long, maybe a dozen repetitions of the name, before the entity it summoned appeared. A basketball-sized globe of blue light dived out of the snow overhead and hurtled down the alley toward my face. I stood steady as it came on. Even with relatively minor summonings, you never let them see you flinch. The globe snapped to an instant halt about a foot away from the donut, and I could just make out the luminous shape of the tiny humanoid figure within. Tiny, but not nearly so tiny as the last time I'd seen him. Hell's bells. He must have been twice as tall as the last time we'd spoken. Toot toot, I said, nodding to the pixie. Toot snapped to attention, piping, "My lord!" The pixie looked like an athletically slender youth, dressed in armor made of discarded trash. His helmet had been made from the cap to a 3-liter bottle of Coca-Cola, and tufts of his fine lavender hair drifted all around its rim. He wore a breastplate made from what looked like a carefully reshaped bottle of Pepto-Bismol and carried a box knife sheathed in orange plastic on a rubber band strap over one shoulder.